You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect. Okay, well, hey, before we get started, I will just answer the question of, like, is there something in his ear? Yes, I have a cotton ball in my ear. I have a cold. And on Friday, there was a little bit of pressure in my sinuses and in my head. And by Friday evening, it was an extremely painful. I've never had that kind of pain. I'm tearing up. I'm taking ibuprofen and Tylenol every 2 hours. And around 11 o'clock, I was watching TV, sitting there with Kendra, and suddenly my ear popped. I'm like, oh, that was wonderful. It feels so much better now. And then I laid to go to bed, and I thought, oh, it was a while since I was in the shower. Why is there water in my ear? And I pulled my finger out, and it was full of blood. So I ended up going to the ER yesterday, and I ruptured my eardrum. Again, looking back on it, I would still take the ruptured eardrum to that horrific pain. So that's what's going on. Now we can move forward and talk about what we're going to do. And so I want to tell you a story, some stories, not really a story, but just more of a who I am. Despite the fact that you're like, oh, Sean, you're a pastor, you are totally loaded. That's why you have a couple of Rolls Royces and some Ferraris and all that. I'm like, yeah, I am. I get it. I understand. I also have a private jet that the elders approved for me. Actually, that's not entirely true. I'm making a little bit less than that. Because of that, I have had in my years to learn to be someone called the word a tinkerer, to be someone that, you know, if something is broken, I can either throw it out and buy a new one or try to fix it. And throw it out and buy a new one usually costs money. It's certainly more than perhaps trying to fix it. And so my kids, like, this is a kit. It's covered in dust because it stays in the basement except when something goes wrong. When something is broken, then this little micro mini toolkit comes out. And I also have a soldering iron that I sometimes will use. And over the years, I have taken these things that, frankly, many people would have been like, let's just throw that out. Let's get rid of it. And I have taken the time to try to repair it. What have I done? Let's see. One of my first things when we were in grad school, the lady that Kendra worked for, she was a nanny, and they had an old, I guess they still exist, but it was an old laser jet printer. And they're like, this thing doesn't even work. If you want it, you can have it. And so I took the whole thing apart and found out that there was actually just a little plastic gear that was cracked. And so I put a little super glue on the plastic gear, put it back in place, and I had a pretty much brand new laser jet printer that we used for years that cost me nothing except maybe the tube of super glue. Let's see what else. A couple of years back, we had an issue with our treadmill. And we have a very, very nice treadmill. And I actually was just telling someone about this story a couple of weeks ago. It's a Gold's Gym, like, professional grade, super nice treadmill. And we, friends of ours, numbers of years ago, moved out of the area, and they threw out on, I don't know, maybe it was MySpace back then, I don't know. They said, we've got this treadmill. It's $50 if you can get it out of our basement, if you come and get it. And we're like, yeah. It was only a couple years old, so like totally, yeah, we'll take that treadmill. And I get to their house, and again, this is a big industrial commercial size, like what you'd see in a fitness center. And when I went down to look at it, I just follow me now. I got to their basement door, and then I went like this. As I made my way down to their basement, because they had a very narrow spiral staircase. I earned every dollar of that $50 to get that treadmill. But anyway, so we had this treadmill, and it broke a number of years ago. It stopped working, and we found out that it was the belt. And so, you know, okay, most people, oh, the treadmill's not working. Let's just buy a new one, you know, because we've got a couple thousand dollars to drop on something like that. I'm like, well, we'll have to stop taking the jet out every weekend. And so I found out that it was the belt. I did some research, pulled it apart, and found that this belt was broken. I went to the online retailer of choice and bought another belt. I think it was $3. Replaced the belt and our $1,200, $1,500 treadmill, good as new. Another point, our oven, our stove went bad. Our oven was down. It did not work. And so I got to into the oven and looked, and something didn't look right. Something didn't quite look right with the heating element. And again, most people, and I'm not, this is not meant as a hit on anybody, but most people be like, I don't know, the oven doesn't work. Let's go to Lowe's, to Walmart, Best Buy, whatever, and buy a new oven, buy a new stove. And I was like, well, that's probably, you know, hundreds of dollars more than maybe fixing it. And I determined that it was indeed the heating element. And again, another online local retailer, not local, but an online retailer, was able to buy a replacement piece for that oven at $20. Replaced the oven. It was good as new, if not better than it was when we'd had it for years. And most recently, I think, did I get all of them? Yeah. Most recently was our dryer. And now we have a dryer that, frankly, I'm not even sure. It came from some of you. Because at one point years ago, when near the early years of MC3, we shared that our dryer was dying. It died. And like the next day, someone showed up on our doorstep and said, here's a dryer. A bunch of us got together and here's the dryer. So we had that dryer, which was incredible. And that stuff happens all the time. If you're new to MC3, you're like, what? That's weird. No, it's actually totally normal around here because it's just that community, that connection we have, which is a good reason to be in a prime group, because if you're not in a prime group, people don't know those needs, and they're like, I had a problem and no one helped. Well, get in a prime group. Stop your whining. Anyway, sorry, that was off the subject. And anyway, so this dryer was broken, and it just bothered me because it was still getting power. And it was still, like, running. Like, the thing was doing a thing, and the air was doing a thing. But it just wasn't hot, which unfortunately is kind of an important part of a dryer. And so I ended up, I look online, and you can find all sorts of stuff. I repaired the carburetor in my snowblower online. Like, you can find everything there. And determined that there might be a continuity issue. And so I got out my continuity tester and said that there could be a bad relay. There's thermostats in there. So I'm like, okay, how much is a kit of thermostats? All the thermostats to replace them was like $14. I'm like, you know what? That's a little bit cheaper than going to the store and buying a new, you know, $700, $500, whatever, $100. So I bought the kit and I replaced one by one, learned how to replace all the different thermostats and pulled the whole guts apart, put it all back together. It still didn't work, and that was a little bit discouraging. My problem was me, because I couldn't get it to work wasn't good enough for me. I wanted to know why I couldn't get it to work. Like, if I couldn't get it to work, that's fine, but I wanted to know why, and I didn't know why. And so I then went even further. I pulled the circuit board apart. I pulled the controllers apart. I looked at everything and did a continuity test on everything. I was down in our basement for hours and hours just doing little tests to make sure that part works, that part works, that part works. Turns out there was a little part of our, you know, the little turning knob. Maybe you don't know, but ours is not, you know, like beep, beep, beep. Ours goes, you know. So with a cart, when that one of the was doink. And so because it was doink instead of it didn't turn on the heater. And I eventually figured that all out and got that part. I'm not kidding you. Ready? Here is how I did not spend $500 to fix to get a new dryer. I bent it like that. Like that. I just went with a pair of pliers, just bent it. Thing works fine. It's worked fine ever since. Saved us a whole lot of money. But I mean, at that point, it had been a couple of weeks of trying to repair it. And Kendra was like, you know, it sure would be nice to have a new dryer because, you know, I don't doubt your ability, dear husband, but new dryer. But anyway, so we didn't get a new dryer and we saved a whole lot of money. I ended up even returning the thermostat kit because it wasn't even the thermostat. So we spent no money to repair that dryer. What's my point? My point is that I am an amazing person. No, my point is I'm going to have a big red spot on my forehead now. How about it, John? My point is that those were things that the printer, the treadmill, the oven, the dryer, those are things that in most people's lives, and again, I'm not saying this in any kind of a moral issue or anything, but most people are like, it's broken, it's worthless, let's get a new one. And today I want to talk about Jonah, Because Jonah was at a spot in his life now where most people would look at him and say, he's broken, he's worthless, it's time to move on to a new one. And so if you were here last week, we were going through this series on the life of Jonah, and we were in chapter 1 looking at Jonah and the fact that God came to Jonah and said, Jonah, I want you to go to Nineveh, and I want you to preach to the people of Nineveh and tell them that they're out of control, essentially. And Jonah, knowing what he knew about Nineveh, refused. He said, there's no way I'm going to go to these people. And he went the other way, got on a ship, headed for Tarshish, and we showed a map there. And if you weren't here last week, you can go to mc3church.org, click on listen to the point, and you can listen to last week. And eventually, a storm rose up on this ship. The people threw him overboard because Jonah realized it was me. And we ended the story with Jonah sinking into the water. And then we said, God provided a fish. And we'll pick up there in a second. But God provided a fish. And I want to talk about that this week. And the point that I want you to get, and you're going to discuss in your prime groups this week as well. The kids in Ignition are learning the exact same thing. The Pit Stop app as well. This week we'll be talking about that. And that is this. Is that me? What am I doing? I gotta fix this. Yeah, there's something wrong. All right, so I'm gonna slowly turn around. The point I want you to get is this: that God is more concerned about His faithfulness than our failure. God is more concerned about His faithfulness than our failure. And so when we get to a spot where we are broken, when our little thing doesn't go click but goes doink, when things aren't the way they're supposed to be, and we are ready to give up on ourselves or other people are ready to give up on us, God says, no, no, I am not giving up. I'm not done because my faithfulness is way bigger than your failure, your mistakes, your brokenness. And that's what we're going to see as we look at Jonah today. But I want you to begin now thinking about that. What is your failure? And maybe it's sin. Maybe it's something you did wrong. Maybe it's just, you know, I'm not good at that. Maybe it's I made a mistake once. Whatever it is, can you come to the point where you're willing to recognize, not admit, you don't need to admit it, it doesn't change whether you agree with it or not, whether you recognize that God is more faithful and more concerned about being faithful than He is about your failures. So we're going to turn on the house lights and we're going to pick up here in Jonah chapter 2. And yes, they're LEDs. Yes, they happen instantly. Yes, everybody stare up at the lights now like we did last week. Whoa, they're on. What is this light thing? Internal electricity? What? I know, it's crazy. Welcome to a new world. But here, and we're going to be in Jonah chapter, this is the beginning of chapter 2, the end of chapter 1. Again, we left the story last week with Jonah disobeying God, and then he was thrown overboard. And then instantly the wind and waves stopped because it was Jonah's fault that there was that big storm. And as he went into the water, it says, now the Lord had arranged for a great fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was inside the fish for 3 days and three nights. So you've got this story. Jonah was in this fish 3 days and three nights. And chapter 2 begins with this. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord, his God, from inside the fish. And we're going to spend the rest of the morning looking at Jonah's prayer and seeing how it continuously, repeatedly, over and over shows that God is more concerned about His faithfulness than our failure. God is more concerned about His faithfulness than your failure. So, let's look at a couple of things here. You know, typically we talk about an epic fail. Well, this is actually a fail epic. This is an epic about a fail. So, So, the first thing is that when we have nothing to say, God listens. When we have nothing to say, God listens. And also, I should share this, that there is a side effect of this eardrum thing. I can't tell if I'm really loud or I'm really quiet, so I'm just trusting Jason. If I'm like really loud, you can back me down back there or whatever. But I can't really hear myself. But when we have nothing to say, ironically, God listens. And what I'm looking at here is, have you ever had those moments And maybe you had this moment, probably not as an adult, I mean, maybe it happened as an adult, but as a kid, where you've done something wrong, and somebody comes up to you and says, "What do you have to say for yourself?" You ever had that happen? No, maybe? Something. What do you have to say for yourself? And for me, it always ended up with young man. Apparently, my beard and my microphone do not get along. Okay. See, we're good now. All right. Okay, so when we have nothing to say, God listens. And this is the second verse in Jonah, chapter 2. And this is what it says here. He said, this is Jonah's prayer now we're looking at. He says, "I cried out to the Lord in my great trouble, and he answered me. I called to you from the land of the dead, and Lord, you heard me." And so what we need to understand at the beginning here is that if you remember last week, Jonah knew that the storm was his fault. And Jonah's response was, "If you throw me overboard, the storm will stop," which, as we saw, it did. And if you remember, when Jonah first said that, the rest of the sailors, what did they do? Do you remember? Instead of throwing Jonah overboard, they tried to row harder. They tried to do whatever they could because they knew that throwing Jonah overboard essentially meant execution. It meant death. And they weren't really keen on that idea of, you know, killing Jonah. But eventually they realized, okay, we need to do this. So in this moment, we know the story of Jonah. And again, as I said last week, as soon as we say Jonah, you're like, oh, the fish, which we already missed the one verse. The main verse was, "And God provided a fish to swallow Jonah." Like, whoosh, one verse, and that's all we ever really know about the story. But we know the end of the story. But to Jonah, to those sailors, this was the end. The story was over because God told Jonah to go somewhere. Jonah disobeyed, went the other way. God said, no, I'm not done with you. You come. And he provided a storm. And then Jonah said, "It's my fault." He jumped over. Okay, God got me back. I got what I deserved. And now I'm going to die. So that's the way the story was headed. And again, if you didn't know the end of the story, you'd be like, oh, I guess that's the end of him. What happens with the sailors? Because I'm sure that's part of the new narrative. That's the new storyline that we're following because Jonah's gone. But it says that in this moment, he cried out to the Lord in his great trouble. And have you been in a moment like that? Have you ever been to a spot like that where you messed up? Where you were in a desperate situation? You were in a bad place? And he just cried out to God. Because I think the for Jonah, and this is, again, we know the end, but for Jonah, he is repeating this prayer to God, but at some moment he is overboard going, "God, help me. God, I'm so sorry. I didn't deserve, I shouldn't have done this. Please help me." And we know that God could have said nothing because Jonah disobeyed God. And Jonah was just getting what he deserved for his disobedience. But he says, "I cried out to the Lord in my great trouble, and he answered me." Like, God answered him. He doesn't deserve God's answer. He knows that he messed up. God knows what he did. I mean, that's the whole point of the storm. And here you have Jonah going, "I'm in this desperate spot. I cried out to God, and he answered." And I want you to understand that no matter what situation you find yourself in, God is never deaf to you. He might not answer the way we want the answer, but God is never giving up on you. God will never turn his back on you. And that's what Jonah realized. He said, "I cried out in my great trouble. He answered me. I called you from the land of the dead." And that's how he's kind of describing it. Like, I was pretty much dead. I'm done. This is the end for me. And God heard me. And I think that's the key that we want to remember, is that when we have nothing to say, God listens. And I don't mean like we don't have anything to say, like I don't know what words to say. I'm saying when we're at that spot where, like, you know what, God, I really don't deserve it for you to answer me. I know, God, you're not even going to listen to me. I know, God, you don't even care about me because who am I? I know I really messed up this time, but God, well, never mind. I just don't deserve it. And I want you to know that even in those moments where we feel like we least deserve it, and I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, God listens. get that. Because his faithfulness is more important than our failure. And as we'll see later, like, the Bible is full of stories of God's faithfulness. People mess up, God's faithful. People do this, God's faithful. This happens wrong, God's faithful. They make this mistake, God's faithful. Why is this all about God's faithfulness? Because that's what the Bible is all about, is God's faithfulness. This story isn't about Jonah. This story is about God. And when we have nothing to say, God listens. We have that, I know I was wrong, but God, if you would, well, never mind. No, not never mind, because God listens. The second thing we see here is that when we've done nothing to deserve, God rescues. When we've done nothing to deserve it, God rescues us. Like, and this is a way bigger than just Jonah and the fish. But there is nothing about us that is worthy, that is good enough for God. And if we try to get to the point where we are good enough for God, you're never going to get there. And when we've done nothing to deserve, God rescues. And this is what we see here in verses 3 to 6. He says, "Then you threw me into the ocean depths, and I sank into the heart of the sea. The mighty water," and this is poetry, by the way, this prayer is a poetic kind of thing. "The mighty waters engulfed me. I was buried beneath your wild and stormy waves. Then I said, O Lord, you have driven me from your presence." So get this, Jonah is thinking, and he realizes, like, this is it. I'm going deeper. God, he recognizes, God, you have driven me from your presence. God, you are killing me. Like, I am dying because of my disobedience. And then he says, and by the way, there's a little hope here. He says, "Yet I will look once more toward your holy temple." See, Jonah's going, God, I'm dead, I'm dying, and I will see you in eternity. But I don't deserve anything else now, because this is what I deserve. This is what I should get for what I did, for my disobedience. And so there isn't even a whining or crying or a like, "Why, God, you're so mean." God, Jonah is like, this is what I deserve. I'm dying. I'm sinking down in, and eventually I'm not going to be able to breathe anymore. And I will see you in eternity. But this is what I deserve for my disobedience. He goes on and says, "I sank beneath the waves, and the waters closed over me. Seaweed wrapped itself around my head. I sank down to the very roots of the mountains. I was imprisoned in the earth, whose gates locked shut forever." Like, some really nice imagery here. Like, I was at the bottom of the ocean. And then he says, "But you, O Lord, my God, snatched me from the jaws of death." He snatched him. He brought him up. He pulled him out. And again, there was nothing that Jonah did. Do you understand, right? Just recognize this from a rational human perspective for a moment. Jonah he wasn't running from God. He's on this boat. A storm comes and he's like, "Hold on, let me fix some things." He made some phone calls. "Hey, can you transfer some money to those people that don't deserve it?" Cool. Okay. And then he quickly posted a message to @Nineveh. "Repent, God is coming." He didn't make it right. He couldn't make any of that right. He didn't even have his phone with him. And he didn't have signal out there either. There was nothing that he did to make it right. Do you get that? Do you see that? He was disobedient. He was in the water. He was drowning. And he recognized that. He's like, this is what I deserve. I disobeyed God. God, you are completely holy. You are completely perfect. You are completely wonderful. And if I deserve to die because I disobeyed you, I deserve it. "But you, O Lord, my God, snatched me from the jaws of death." Because there was nothing that he did to deserve it. And yet God saved him. God rescued him. He expected to die for his disobedience. But God said, no, my faithfulness is bigger. And I've got a bigger story to tell. And I've got some more important things that are happening here than your disobedience. And so he's expecting to die. He didn't deserve anything else. And yet God rescued him. We've said this before many times. You've heard me say, there is nothing that you can do to make God love you more. There's nothing that you can do to make God love you more at all. you can keep working and trying to be better and be gooder and do more-er and give more away and show up at church, not just every other Sunday, but every Sunday, and not just go to one prime group. Sign up for all of them. Do it! But there's nothing that you can do to make God love you more, and there is nothing that you can do to make God love you less. There is nothing, because God is faithful. We have done nothing to deserve it, but He loves us so much that He says, I'm rescuing you. I am offering you rescue. And ultimately, that rescue is through Jesus. Jesus said, I'm going to be your rescue. There's nothing you can do to deserve it. There's nothing you can do to earn it. You can't be good enough. There's nothing that can happen that God can use, that you can do, that will cause God to go, oh, wait, now you deserve it. Romans 5:8 says, while we were sinners, while we turned away from God, while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That's when Jesus came in. Because we can't earn our way there. Because we can't make our way there. And I'm telling you, if you are here today because you're like, this will make God happy with me, you're wrong. You're wrong. Your sin, anytime we choose to disobey God, even just once, that's sin. And that is enough to separate us from God. And no matter how hard you try, you can't get back. You can't be good enough. And that's why Jesus said, I know. So I'm coming. I'm going to die in your place. I'm going to take the punishment that you deserve. I'm going to rescue you. Comes down to our faith in Jesus Christ. And my question for you is this: have you called out to God for Him to rescue you? Just showing up to church doesn't do it. It's a decision, a belief that Jesus died for my sins. I don't deserve it, but He died for my sins. He took my punishment so that I could have His perfection and have eternity in heaven. And if you're not sure if you've done that, certainly you can talk to me. You can talk to one of the elders. Pretty much anybody up on this platform will be glad to talk to you, your prime group leader. Like, this isn't like a, hey, I'm going to be good now. No, it's not enough. Because when we've done nothing to deserve it, that's when God rescues us, because we can't do anything else. And again, we are like Jonah. We are sinking. There is nothing that's going to stop us from death except for the fact that God comes in and says, I'm snatching you. So when we've done nothing to deserve, God rescues. And then finally, when there's nothing to offer, God uses. Like, we come to God and God, like, what do we have? What, like, have you thought about the fact that we were singing just a few moments ago. We're talking about the God that created the universe. And it says this is how He created it. He took a long time and built a machine. And that machine had many, many moving parts. And He got many, many people together that were there, angels maybe. And they worked the machine. And one guy fed like the coal into the machine, or natural gas, or solar power, wherever you are in your perspective. And the machine then started to grow. And then there were cogs and gears that turned. And slowly, after weeks, hours, months, years, eventually there was a little glimmer of the beginning of Earth. And then after like millennia and more millennia, and eventually there was more, and it took so much work, and God was like, okay, let me take my breath. And then no. How did it happen? God spoke, and there was. Like, that's who we're talking about. We're talking about a God that spoke, and the universe came into existence. So, keeping that in mind, when you come before that great God of the universe, who is perfect, who is wonderful, who is everything that is glorious and powerful, and we sung about it, all that, and you go, hey God, here's what I got to give you, because you're missing something, I'm sure. And what's that something? Oh, it's me. That's right. Because God, I am, well, amazing. Like, seriously, we don't have that. Like, you wouldn't even go to a job interview like that. Even if you were the best at what you do. Because sometimes you even lose to the Titans in the playoffs. Because that seems to be what happens if you're the best. You keep losing to the Titans. but we've got nothing to offer. And yet, God chooses to use us. And that's what verses 7 to 10 says. He goes on and says, "When my life was slipping away, I remembered the Lord. And my earnest prayer went out to you in your holy temple." Like, this is a passionate prayer. This isn't just some quick words. Like, "God, get me out of this and I'll be okay. Okay, I promise I'll do stuff for you." Like, whatever. Like, no, this is a legitimate, "God, I know that you are right. I know that obeying you is worth it." That's this earnest prayer. He remembered the Lord and had this prayer. And then he has this little comment, and it's just beautiful. He says, "Those who worship false gods turn their backs on all of God's mercies." Your translation might say, "Those who worship worthless idols." The Hebrew, which is how this was written, the word actually, literally means those who worship worthless nothingness. Like, that's the word. They missed out on God's mercies. And if you were here during our another Summer of Psalms series over the summer, we talk about this word chesed, this Hebrew word chesed, which means God's undeserved favor, his unconditional love, this mercy that we don't deserve. And that's the word here. People that don't follow the true God, Jonah says, they're missing out. They're missing out because they think, "Oh, well, I need to earn this. I need to work harder at this. I need to do more to get this. I need to work out my schedule so that this can happen." And he says, they miss out. They miss out on the fact that we have a God that we can just go to and God say, "I don't deserve this." And God shows his chesed. God shows his mercy. And so then parenthetical statement. He says, "But I will offer sacrifices to you with songs of praise, and I will fulfill all my vows." And again, this idea of making sacrifices and vows, like, this wasn't "God, get me out of this and I promise to do good things." This was a life-changing moment. This is "I've made a decision and now I am turning this way. I am going in a different direction from where I'm going. I am following you, God." And he says, "For salvation comes from the Lord alone." He recognized that it had nothing to do with Jonah, had nothing to do with his skills, had nothing to do with what he had to offer, but had everything to do with God. So you've got this moment where he's got nothing to offer. He's in the middle of a fish, in the bottom of the Mediterranean Sea. Like, you don't even have bargaining chips at that point. And we'll see next week that he probably smelled pretty foul. And he's here going, "God, I've got nothing. Would you use me?" And here's the answer. "Then the Lord ordered the fish to spit Jonah out onto the beach." Other translations say onto dry land. God's like, "Okay, now you're ready, Jonah. Now your heart is where it needs to be. Now you recognize that it's not about you. It's not about what you have to offer. It's not about your, as we looked at last week, it's not about your opinion on these people. It's about me and what I am going to do to those people, for those people, and what I'm going to do through you." And so we need to remember, when there's nothing to offer, God uses. Like, don't ever get to the point where you're like, "I've messed up. I've failed too much. I've gone too far. God can never use me." Jonah was in a fish. If you're in a fish, then you can start comparing stories. But he was in a fish because he disobeyed God, because God sent a storm to the ship and Jonah expected to die, and God swallowed him in a fish and he says, "Okay, God, I'll follow you. I'm willing to do what you have for me." And again, if we were writing the story, if someone had bothered you, and you have a chance to talk about that in your prime groups a little bit this week, if someone had offended you and you said, "I want you to do that," and they're like, "No, I'm not doing that. Who do you think you are?" And they go the other way. And then they said, "Okay, I don't deserve this, whatever." And then they said, "Okay, I'm coming back to you. I'm sorry, I messed up. I'll follow you now." We'd be like, "Nah, you're done." And if they said, "Well, I promise this time I'm going to do it right. I promise. And if they were in the fish, we'd be like, and the next verse was, and the fish chewed him up and digested him, and that was the end of Jonah. Yeah. Sucker. Teach you to disobey me. No. It ended with, and then God ordered the fish, God commanded the fish to spit Jonah out on to dry land. So, what is the point in all of this? Why do we see this? Again, we're way past the story that most of us know. the fish. Wait, he's out of the fish? There's more to the story? There's two more chapters, believe it or not. But we see in this prayer that Jonah has in the middle of this fish that God is more concerned with his faithfulness than our failures. God is more concerned about his faithfulness than our failures. And so, here's the thing. We spend a lot of time being concerned about our failures. And God's like, no, go. Yeah, but God, I mean, this is what I did because I can't handle that. Yeah, but God, I made this mistake and I screwed up big time. Okay, because I can't handle that. God, I don't have much to offer. Oh, okay, well, in that case, never mind then, because I never use people to have a little bit to offer fish and bread. 5,000 people, men, maybe 10,000, 1,200 people that he fed with five loaves of bread and two fish. Like, that's what God's all about. And we come to him going, yeah, but never. And God says, no, it's not about you. It's about my faithfulness. And I'm more concerned about my faithfulness and showing how great I am than about your little petty failures, because I'm bigger than that. So I want to quickly look at some things, some areas where God's faithfulness is greater. And again, if you read, like, just take some time to read the Bible. I can't guarantee this, but most likely it's going to take you like 12 chapters in any portion of the Bible. I could be wrong about this. But in 12 chapters, you will find someone that messed up big and God used them. I just randomly picking that, now you're like, oh, let's see if I can prove him wrong. Like, fine. But let me just say, in general, the Bible is full of stories of God's faithfulness being greater. And so maybe this is your story where you're like, I don't know. I felt inadequate. I feel like a failure. And I love that song. I love all the songs this morning. But through it all, my eyes are on you. It is well with my soul. God, you've got this. And we need to come to the spot where we can do that. Or we can stop, and I don't mean this as a negative, you're a loser kind of thing. But like, we spend so much time focusing on ourselves, and God's like, no. I want to do something bigger. I'm not concerned about your past. That's why I sent Jesus. So that you don't have to perform, so that you don't have to do it. So the first thing is that God's faithfulness is greater than our mistakes. And here, I'm not looking at like this mistake in terms of sin. I mean, there are things, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Like, sin is something where we know this is what we're supposed to do, and we do the wrong thing. We know this is what God wants from us, and we choose to disobey. But sometimes we just make stupid mistakes. Like, sometimes we just do things, what was I thinking? Like, you ever have one of those moments where you're like, you know, standing in water, and you plug in an outlet? It's not a sin issue, but don't do that. Like, there's things that we do where, like, wow, that was not the right decision. Why did I do that? And so there are moments in our lives where I think we have made mistakes, and those mistakes might have been big. And we're like, wow, because I did that, because I made that decision, because I went to that place, because I married that person, because I whatever. We have this idea that, you know, I'm kind of on this path. It kind of sucks, but this is where I am. And I just want you to know, God's faithfulness is greater than your mistakes. One example in the Bible is Peter. Peter, okay? So I just want to show you God's faithfulness here. And we're going to look at some very quick snippets of some of these stories. But here's Peter in John chapter 18. And just quick context, Jesus just finished praying in the Garden of Gethsemane with his disciples. He knew he was about to be betrayed. We actually talked about that in the One of Us series last month about Jesus' prayer. And so at this point, a crowd of people led by Judas, the traitor, and Roman soldiers were there to arrest Jesus. And again, I just chopped you right into the middle of the story. It says, again, he asked them, Jesus, who is it you want? Jesus of Nazareth, they said. Jesus answered, I told you that I am he. If you are looking for me, then let these men go. Excuse me. What happened? This happened so that the words that he had spoken would be fulfilled. I have not lost one of those you gave me. So the men are there to arrest him. And Jesus said, I should also add this. For 3 years or so, Jesus had these 12 followers. We call them 12 disciples. And a disciple was just that, a follower. They went everywhere with Jesus. They spent their life, living life with Jesus. And he continuously instructed them, he instructed the crowds, and he said, look, I'm going to die, I'm going to rise again to rescue the world. I'm going to die, I'm going to rise again to rescue the world. I'm going to die, I'm going to rise again to the rescue of the world. I'm going to die, I'm going to... Okay, so Peter was there for all that. They said, I'm here to arrest Jesus. So then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. So poor Malchus. See, I get it, Malchus. I feel you. This wasn't intentional. And so he struck off his, like, Peter was just kind of like, ha-ha-da! Like, you're not taking him. And there wasn't necessarily sin in that. But then Jesus commanded Peter, that's a strong word in Greek, put your sword away. You idiot, what are you doing? Shall I not drink the cup my father has given me? Peter, do you not get what I've been saying for these 3 years? Put your sword away. What are you thinking? And that's the loose translation of the Greek there. What are you thinking? And just Peter was like, no way. And it wasn't necessarily a sin. I mean, I guess cutting off people's ears, or maybe that's one of the commandments somewhere. But Jesus was like, no, what are you doing? And Peter made a mistake, and here he gets reprimanded by the Son of God. Like, wow, Peter, you're a loser. You're done. Apparently 3 years wasn't enough. You're still in this last moment cutting off someone's ear. You made a mistake. There's no turning back from that, Peter. Goodbye. And then Peter went on and denied Jesus 3 times, which was definitely more on the sin side of things. So, you know, here's the guy that made a mistake. Here's a guy that could have been like, yeah, what was I thinking? Why did I do that? Like, this is the most important event in the life of, I don't know, eternity for humanity, that Jesus has to go to the cross. And here I am chopping off some guy's ears. And so Peter just went off to a corner and laid in bed, picked up a nice YouTube habit, and just spent the rest of his days staring at the internet. Because he made a mistake, and there's no turning back from that. But if you actually know anything about the Bible, you see a little bit later, several weeks later, Jesus dies, rises again 3 days later, and then he walks around, shows everybody he's alive, ascends to heaven, and says, look, you guys are going to be my witnesses in the world to these 12 disciples. Well, it's 11 at that point, but then they added another one. And he says, you're going to be the ones to start this thing. And they say, okay. He said, the Holy Spirit's going to come, and then you'll know it's me. So this happens in the beginning of Acts. And in Acts chapter 2, everybody, all of a sudden, the Holy Spirit appears and shows up. And these people are all speaking the languages of the people from their other nationalities. And they can understand their own languages and people. And that's a whole other topic. And everybody's like, what is going on here? These guys must be drunk. And it says, then Peter stood up. Wait, Peter, what's he doing there? He made a mistake. He screwed up. Why is he in this story? Peter stood up and been like, guys, I'm an idiot too. See ya. Peter out. No, it says Peter stood up with 11, raised his voice and addressed the crowd. And he says, fellow Jews and all of you who live in Jerusalem, and they were all gathered together here at Pentecost. And he says, let me explain this to you. Listen carefully what I have to say. And then he went on for verses and verses and verses, at least in our Bibles, and shared what Jesus came to do. Why he came to this earth, why he died on the cross, why he rose again. And so here is Peter. And then it says here in verse 41, those who accepted his message were baptized. Oh, like a couple people listened. Oh, that's neat, Peter. See, you're not that much of a loser. You had a couple people that listened to you. And about 3,000 were added to their number that day. Like, we've baptized, I think, 75-some people and here at MC3 over the last 8 years. And that's an incredible number. I mean, that's just an incredible number. It's amazing of what God is doing in people's hearts and changing them and drawing people to himself. That's like nothing compared to 3,000. So here's this guy that made a mistake, and God says, no, I'm going to use you because my faithfulness is bigger than your mistakes. And now Peter became essentially the beginning of the church. God used Peter to start what we are a part of now 2,000 years later. Because God's faithfulness is bigger than our mistakes. So have you ever felt like you made a mistake and that's it? There's no coming back from this? Because God's not done with you. His faithfulness is greater than our mistakes. The second thing is that, and again, these aren't necessarily failures, but we kind of look at ourselves this way as a failure. God's greatness, or God's faithfulness is greater than our hardship. Because sometimes we look at a situation and we're like, oh, things are so hard right now. Things are so difficult. There's no way. Like, God's done with me. Like, I don't deserve anything. It's woe is me. Things are miserable. This is hard. I don't know if I just can't handle what's going on, my relational issues, my job situation, my money situation. And we get into these spots where we're like, yeah, God doesn't even know who I am. Like, this is just too much. There's no way that I could come out of this. And I just want to share the story of Joseph. And again, you can find many people in the Bible. But Joseph, meaning the son of Jacob / Israel, not the mother of Jesus, or he's not the mother, the wife of Mary, the mother of Jesus. The husband, come on, you know what I'm saying. Old Testament Joseph, not New Testament Joseph. There. And in Genesis chapter 37 to 40, and I don't have time to read the whole story, but you guys might want to because you're going to have a chance to discuss it in your prime groups. But Joseph, now he was apparently a little arrogant, but the short version is Joseph's brothers were tired of him. He was a younger guy, tired of the way he was acting towards them. And so they threw him into a cistern, which is a hole in the ground. And they're like, let's kill him. And they're like, well, Dad might get mad if we kill our brother. So they decided that when there were Ishmaelites who were Midianite traders came by, Joseph's brothers pulled him out of the cistern and sold him to them for 20 pieces of silver. So Joseph was sold as a slave. And the traders took him to Egypt. Egypt is a long way from where they are. Okay, that's pretty much at that time one of the furthest locations that you could be and still be in a populated area from where Joseph's brothers were. And so then he was there in Egypt, and it was a while there, and we don't know, but it's probably months at the very least. The journey probably didn't take like a day. It wasn't a quick flight. And they got to Egypt, and then it says, meanwhile, there in verse 36, the traders arrived in Egypt where they sold Joseph to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. So now Joseph gets sold on to this next guy, this guy Potiphar. And so he's there working at Potiphar's house, and there's a whole interesting, really cool story about that. But he's there for a while as a slave. Let's not forget that. Okay, he is the servant there. Chapter 39, verses 19 to 20, there's this whole situation where Potiphar's wife tries to sleep with Joseph. Joseph's like, no, I'm not going to dishonor God. And she says, fine, I'll tell everybody you did anyway, that you tried to rape me. And so Potiphar comes home, finds out about this, and says, Potiphar was furious when he heard the wife's story about how Joseph had treated her. He took Joseph and threw him into the prison where the king's prisoners were held, and there he remained. So now Joseph's in prison. And he says he was there for a while. He was there for a significant amount of time. And it said that while he was there, there were these two other guys that came to prison. Joseph interpreted their dreams and said, here's what God is going to do. And it's kind of crazy. You're going to die. You're going to live. Hey, when you live and you get to these high positions, don't forget about me because I'm in prison here. Tell them, you know, that I said this. And it says in verse 23 of chapter 40, Pharaoh's chief cupbearer, however, forgot all about Joseph, never giving him another thought. And I don't have time to break in, but if you look at the multiple times in this segment of 37 to 40 where it says, and sometime later, a long time after that, a while after that. So we're looking at years, most likely decades, where Joseph is either a slave or in prison. And a guy like that, like, yeah, okay, like, you know, we're like, oh, this has been really hard for like 3 whole days. And Joseph has been in prison for years, possibly decades. And it's easy for us to be like, well, this is just too much. I'm done. I don't care. God's never going to get me out of this. And Joseph had, like, again, it made sense for him to feel that way. But then in chapter 41 and then on, God raises him up to this position where he ends up bringing his brothers into Egypt to rescue them from a famine that was coming. And that's a whole long story. But at the very end of Genesis, in chapter 50 there, the brothers, Jacob dies, Israel. Joseph's dad, the brother's dad, dies. And now the boys are scared. They're old. They're older men. But the brothers are scared because now that dad's out of the way, Joseph's going to kill us for what we did to him. And Joseph's response was, you intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. He brought me to this position so I could save the lives of many people. And he didn't hurt his brothers at all. And so here's a guy that had all these years of hardship, And God said, I'm going to use that because, and again, read the story. It's incredible how God's weaving these little pieces that he got from there to there because of this, and from there to there because of that. And we'd never been able to rescue all of the people of Israel if he had never been in prison, if he had never been sold into slavery. And so despite our hardship, like don't let that be like, no, that's it. Recognize that God is faithful. His faithfulness is greater than that. Have you ever felt like you're in a hard place financially, relationally, emotionally? Like we get stuck in these kind of these depression moments and we're like, God can't use me, I'm done. And I want you to know God is faithful. He's faithful beyond your emotions. He's faithful beyond your finances. He's faithful beyond your hardships. He's faithful. His faithfulness is greater than any of that. All right, we got to go a little bit faster here because we're going slow, I guess. The third thing is that God's faithfulness is greater than our obscurity. And again, this isn't a wrong thing, but a lot of times we're like, who am I? I'm a nobody. I'm someone that doesn't really matter. You know, if you knew where I grew up, if you knew my situation, if you knew how much I made, if you knew how long I've tried to get a job, whatever, we have this idea that our obscurity, that we're not important enough for God. And I want to talk about this guy named David. And again, we know King David. We know King David as the king, and that's pretty cool. But David, at the beginning of his story, was a nobody. And in 1 Samuel 16, God says to Samuel, I want you to go find the next king. You're going to anoint someone that I'm going to choose as the next king of Israel. And so they go to this guy named Jesse, which is the small town of Bethlehem, And nobody, like, why would you go to Bethlehem? And so he goes there and he finds this guy, Jesse, that God sends him to. And he says, okay, Jesse, one of your sons, I want you to bring them before me because God's going to choose one of them to be the next king of Israel. And so all the sons, the oldest one, the strongest one, the biggest one, they all went in front of Samuel. And it says here in verses 1 to 3, in the same way, actually it's not that verse, but in the same way, all seven of Jesse's sons were presented to Samuel. But Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord has not chosen any of these. Then Samuel asked, are these all the sons you have? And Jesse's reply, like, get this. An important man, a prophet speaking on behalf of God, says, I want you to bring your sons in because I'm going to choose one of them to be the next king of Israel. And even his own dad felt like, I mean, there's David. Like, why would you want David? Yeah, they're still the youngest. He's out in the field watching the sheep and goats. Like, he's out there with them because that's where he belongs because he's David. I mean, I know we're just from Bethlehem, but come on. And Samuel says, send him for him at once. We will not sit down to eat until he arrives. So Jesse sent for him. He was dark and handsome with beautiful eyes. And the Lord said, this is the one. Anoint him. Out of obscurity, God chose this person. And then moving on later at the end, God made a promise to David. Near the end of his, well, not the end, kind of in the middle of his reign, he says to David, your house and your kingdom will endure forever before me. Your throne will be established forever. And if you read into the genealogy in Matthew and the genealogy in the other one, I'm totally blank there, it's my ear. David was in the line of Jesus. Jesus was in the line of David, I guess you could say. It goes that way. And so here's this guy who was a nobody, and God says, I'm choosing him, and he's going to be the biggest king, the greatest king, the most important king, and his kingdom is going to endure forever. And they talk about Jesus will one day return to this earth, and he will sit on David's throne, because that is how great this king was. He was called a man after God's own heart. We did a whole series called After God a couple years ago. And you can find that at mc3church.org. But he's greater than our obscurity. And he was a nobody. David was a nobody. And do you ever feel like you're not enough blank for God to use you? What's your blank? Oh, I'm not good enough. Oh, I'm not important enough. I'm not popular enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not strong enough. I'm not wealthy enough. I'm not smart enough. Like, we have all these I'm not enough. And God's like, my faithfulness is greater than whatever you think you don't have enough of. Whether how obscure you think you are, God is more faithful. And then finally, God's faithfulness is greater than our sin. And no matter how we've messed up, no matter what we've done, God says, I've forgiven that through Jesus on the cross. Your sin is not going to hold you back. And if you start looking in the Bible for that, like, everybody messed up. David, man after God's own heart, greatest king of all of Israel. He had an affair. He committed adultery. He killed a man because of the adultery to cover it up. You know, normal things. Like, and he was still considered that. But I want to look at this guy named Moses that we all know as Moses, the one that led the people out of Israel. But there's this little verse in chapter 2 of Exodus we kind of quickly go through. But it says, one day after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people, looking this way and that, and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Again, that kind of, we kind of fly through that, or I think there was the Prince of Egypt almost made it look like an accident. That, oh no, I accidentally killed someone. But typically you don't go, pow! Like, typically that's not an accident. Maybe he didn't have a gun. And then hit him in the sand. So here's a murderer. Like, wow, that's kind of a big one, right? Well, at least I didn't murder anybody. Moses did, so God's done with him. Good luck with that. Moses doesn't deserve anything. And then at the end of his life, in Deuteronomy, and of course Moses led the people through the wilderness. He led them out of the land of Egypt after 400 years of slavery, through the plagues, crossing the Red Sea with the waters parting and all of that. And in Deuteronomy 34, at the end of his life, this description said, since then no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, who did all those signs and wonders the Lord sent him to do in Egypt, to Pharaoh and to all his officials and to the whole land. For no one has ever shown the mighty power or performed the awesome deeds that Moses did in the sight of all of Israel. So there's no sin that is beyond God's grace, that is beyond God's faithfulness. Like, God's not done with you. God's faithfulness is greater than our mistakes, than our hardship, than our obscurity, than our sin. And don't ever let something like that hold you back. And just in case you're not sure, listen to what Paul writes. And you're going to have a chance to listen to this again in Prime Groups this week. Paul says this in Romans chapter 8. He says, can anything ever separate us from Christ's love? Does it mean he no longer loves us if we have trouble or calamity or are persecuted or hungry or destitute or in danger or threatened or with death? As the scriptures say, for your sake we are killed every day. We are being slaughtered like sheep. So, you know, if it's one of those situations, then maybe that'll separate us from Christ's love. And Paul says, no. Despite all these things, overwhelming victory is ours through Christ who loved us. And I am convinced that nothing can ever separate us from God's love. Neither death nor life, nor angels, nor demons, neither our fears for today, nor our worries about tomorrow, not even the powers of hell can separate us from God's love. No power in the sky above or on the earth below, indeed nothing in all of creation will ever be able to separate us from the love of God that is revealed in Christ Jesus our Lord. God is more concerned about His faithfulness than our failure. And it's time we start to believe that and watch Him do incredible things through us, because He is amazing. Let's pray. God, thank You so much that You are so incredibly faithful. And there is nothing that we can do, no situation that we can be in, no belly of a fish that we find ourselves where we are outside of Your ability to be faithful, Your ability to use us, Your ability to take us and transform us into something beautiful. Thank You that we can trust You, that we can rely on Your faithfulness. And I pray that You would help us, each person in this room, whether they're struggling with a mistake that they made, whether they're struggling with their obscurity, whether they're struggling with sin, whether it's something else that is just they feel like is not enough. God, I pray that we would rest in Your faithfulness. and watch you use us, even when we don't deserve it. Thank you that there is nothing that can separate us from your love, that there is nothing we can do to make you love us more, and there's nothing that we can do to make you love us less. In Jesus' name, amen.